Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS, and this is the Limon Technical Net. Limon Technical Net has been going strong for 43-odd years. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we gather together in front of the radios, and I hope a lot of people have joined me, so that we can learn from each other, teach each other, and entertain each other. And I have a fun time with it, and I hope you do too, and hope you'll continue to come back and be a part of it. Let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual link. Okay. If you want to reach me and you can't do it on the radio, then email is as good a way as any. That would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions, people who couldn't get on to the radio at 8 p.m. on Sunday night, would email Mel, K2KEY, and after him, John, KC2WGB, and they would basically write down in text questions to ask Vic, and those gentlemen would come on at 8 o'clock or so and ask Vic questions, and he would answer them. So if you email me a question and it sounds like a good one to discuss, I'll try as best I can to talk about it and try and get other people to participate as well. You can either listen to our audio stream of it, or you can grab a file in the archives of the technical net and listen to it at your leisure in non-real time. Also, if you have a topic for discussion, occasionally technical things come into the news, and many of our people listening and participating have a great deal of knowledge in diverse subjects, and they contact me and say, you know, I'd like to say about 10, 15 minutes worth of words about this particular technology in the news. Would you mind? And I say, fine. Or there are other people who just want to be part of a conversation on a topic, or there are other people who just want to hear other people talk about it because they're new to it. So topics are a good reason to email me. Also, if you have a technical puzzle, we're always looking for technical puzzles to stimulate discussion. I like them when you can't Google the right answer immediately. I actually found a few interesting puzzles in the past where if you Google them, you get the wrong answer, and that always amuses me, because I can tell the guys who Google the answer. Anyway, so if you have a technical puzzle or such, share it with me in email, or if you want me to tap a Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space or NASA-related story, you can, of course, email him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But mine, for the sake of all the previous reasons I've mentioned, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, every week I put together a cut and paste of some interesting YouTube and articles and all kinds of interesting stuff I find over the week, and I put it on a link page, and the link page is available 24/7, and I keep it up for years and years and years. So you can go back and see what I found interesting 5 years ago. The way to get my link page is to just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the link page. We have a chat room available that I haven't gotten into tonight. I'll do it when I get a moment. Sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's noisy as heck. You can get to it by typing in chat.ac2gs.com. We have an audio stream. If you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, it will bring you an audio stream to any place that has internet access. So you don't have to be within radio distance to listen in, although you could also go through Echolink. I also want to remind people of Mike KC2NJI's great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. He's had over 1 million visitors, and he has archives of the technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of that. I will drop for a second so that I can open up the chat room, and I'll be right back. Okay, that didn't take too long. Well, our plans for tonight are the usual ones. We're going to take questions, topics of interest, such, from the audience. If you have an amateur radio question, I would prefer those to go first. but we will address any kind of science or technological question you might have as best we can. So with that in mind, we'll do that until about 10:15, hopefully, and Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m. when I will return and tie a bow on it and wish you all well. So that's the plans. If the universe stays rational the way I hope it is, and my radio equipment works and the repeater works. With all that in mind, if anyone has any questions of a technical nature, please feel free. Hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name, and your call sign.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Rich is recognized. Anyone else care to join us here? Wesley recognized for the science section, so that's towards the end of our, when we get done with the amateur radio-related questions. Anyone else with any questions or topics for discussion tonight, please hit that push-to-talk, give me your first name and call sign.
This is Kilo Delta 2, India Bravo Hotel. Scott, I'm just checking in and out.
Okay, Scott, good to hear you. Hopefully at some point someday, if you got any questions, please, or any topics of interest, feel free. Technical nature, or topics for discussion, or you have to report on something that you brought up in previous technical nets, and you tried a little experiment, discovered something, and want to share it with us all. Any of those reasons, hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, hopefully later on there'll be more participation in such. So, first up on the list for tonight is Rich W2BZ. What's your question or topic for discussion tonight, Rich?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening to all those who are listening. It's a simple question. I just wonder why they say don't use an antenna with a loop. Can't figure out why not, because I just built a loop. I can't get it below 3-to-1 on the band it was built for, 10 meters. But I don't want to use an antenna tuner because I've heard you're not supposed to. Just wondering why. Back to you, Roy.
This is on Kim JW.
Hello, Alan. You want to answer Rich's question?
Maybe. I don't know. Be more specific about the, is it a mag loop or is it a full web loop or what's the story? Is it loops work?
It's a 10-meter mag loop with a correct capacitor for it.
Okay. Do you have an antenna bridge?
An antenna bridge? No. I have a tuner. Well, it's being coupled through a coupling loop. Is that what you're asking?
Negative. There are two adjustments that you have to make on a mag loop. One adjustment is the tuning capacitor, and that resonates at the frequency. And the other is the gamma match or the Faraday loop, and that matches the impedance. Those are the two adjustments. When you say you can't get the SWR below 3-to-1, I imagine you're trying to adjust the Faraday loop, the match. But you can't adjust the match until you've resonated the loop, and you can't really resonate the loop without an antenna bridge over.
I thought a mag loop is a larger outer loop and a smaller inner coupling loop. I thought that's all there was to it.
That's correct. That's all there is to the antenna. But the large loop must be resonated. The tuning capacitor that's at the top of that or at the bottom of that resonates at the frequency, and you must use an antenna bridge to resonate at the frequency. Well, no, I take it back. You don't have to use an antenna bridge. You can pick up noise. but you have to do that adjustment first before you try to adjust the match, over.
Well, I've done that. I have a capacitor at the bottom of the loop, and I've tuned it for lowest SWR as I can, and the lowest SWR the capacitor will tune this loop to is 3 to 1.
Yeah, you're adjusting the wrong thing. Nobody said anything about an SWR bridge. Although an SWR bridge can tell you what you end up with if it's adjusted properly, but it's not going to help you to adjust it. You have to resonate the large loop with the tuning capacitor to 10 meters. And you can do that by peaking the noise in your receiver. It'll go... Peaking the noise will tune it to frequency. Only after it's tuned to frequency can you adjust the Faraday loop for low SWR. Over.
Question. I forgot to say, I'm using a VNA to look at where the dips are, and that's what I'm using to determine what the lowest SWR I can get when I turn the capacitor.
Once again, watching an SWR bridge as you adjust the tuning capacitor does you no good at all. The tuning capacitor is to resonate the loop to frequency. You can still have a substantial mismatch. You can only adjust the coupling loop, the Faraday loop, with the gamma match after you have resonated the loop to frequency. Then you can adjust this for low SWR. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time. Over.
I didn't think the coupling loop, the common relationship between the coupling loop and the outer loop is that the coupling loop is 20% of the diameter of the diameter of the outer loop. Once you get that up there, I don't see in anything that I've looked at people adjusting that coupling loop. They're only tuning the antenna with the capacitor. So I completely don't understand. Roy, if you could make me understand, maybe I'm missing something, but I thought that once you put that coupling loop in the circuit, and like I said, it being 20% the diameter of the outer loop, what you adjust is the capacitor, the air capacitor, for a lowest resonance. I'm missing something big. That I don't understand. Go ahead.
Let me just make sure that I have the repeater for a second, so let me just check. Okay, someone out there also wanted to make a comment. So that person who wanted to make a comment, if you want to, you can make your comment now.
AD2 to you.
Yes, Alex.
What's an antenna bridge? Over.
That's a good question. It's kind of esoteric in these days. Also, let me just check with Alan. You could use a grid dip meter as well, can't you, for this purpose?
I think so, yeah. I think you can. I just haven't used a grid dip meter. I have an MFJ antenna bridge. Nowadays, the MFJ antenna bridges have a built-in counter. But when I bought mine, they didn't. So I have a separate optoelectronics counter and an MFJ antenna bridge. It measures the resonant frequency of the antenna and the impedance of the antenna. And that 20% of the Faraday loop to the mag loop is a good starting point. But if you look at the YouTube videos, you'll find somebody says if you squish that and make it an oval instead of a circle, you get better coupling. I do better with a gamma match. I don't use the Faraday loop. If you look at my QRZ page, you'll see a picture of my antenna. I've built about a dozen mag loops, so I know the antenna quite well. Back to net.
Yes, I've seen your QRZ page. I understand. A lot of guys, unfortunately, don't really do a lot of research. They just kind of follow someone else's plan who kind of did it all but didn't quite talk about it. I think what Alan is getting at is, if you know, it goes back to good old Dick May, rest in peace. First you resonate, then you radiate. So what you effectively, if you're starting from scratch, you want to know if the loop itself, not the driven extra element, but the loop, a simple split loop with a air variable capacitor, is at a certain capacitance tuned for the frequency that you want to test it at. So something like an antenna bridge or a grid dip meter provides the same service. It will give you a point of resonance. So when you finally adjust the variable capacitor into a point of actual resonance, then you can worry about driving the antenna and matching the impedance to a 50 ohm input from your transmitter. And Alan prefers gamma matches, which are not the most common variety. You will see, other than including his QRZ page, you will see others. We talked about a massive Italian commercial magnetic loop that uses gamma matching. Most magnetic loops that you'll see and hear about will be inductively coupled. They'll have a loop, a smaller loop, either at the very top or at the very bottom, depending upon where you put the opposite end of where you put the adjustable capacitor. And by changing the geometry, you can affect the impedance transformation. And you're attempting, once it's resonant, you're attempting to then modify the match to as close to 50 ohms as possible. Hopefully that's another way of phrasing what you just said, Alan, right?
I agree 100% with everything that you said.
Okay, very good. Let me just check that I have the repeat. That's what's going on. But the problem is that most people who promote magnetic loops and build magnetic loops leave that important factor completely out. And they just kind of appear with this smaller loop at a position where it works for them. And sometimes it's hit or miss, which is not a good way of doing it, and sometimes it's the way Alan suggests, which is the best way, trying to optimize the power transfer and matching the impedance as best you can. So do you understand what Alan's trying to tell you, Rich?
NQKW, brother?
Yeah, sure, Alan.
But this has nothing to do with mag loops, but I used to have a cubicle quad. And when you build a cubicle quad, you adjust the driven element for resonance, and then you adjust the reflector from maximum front to back. You turn your back on somebody and you adjust it for minimum signal. And I had to adjust my quad every spring, because the ice would stretch the wire and it wasn't resonant. And if the antenna's not adjusted, it's pretty worthless. It's the same thing with mag loops. You can't measure and then expect it to work. You have to actually see the dip. You have to actually resonate the antenna. And then it works quite well. Over.
But I agree with the DNA. But unfortunately, we live in a world where a lot of people are sort of tinkerers. They just try a lot of stuff out and they stop when it sort of works to a tolerable degree. It's not the best method, but it's a very common method, unfortunately.
Boy, I'm missing. So I feel like I'm talking to lawyers who have a penchant for overcomplicating things. 99.9% of the loops I've seen on YouTube or in books or on the internet, wherever, okay, has an outer loop of a certain dimension, and there's a formula for that which can be seen at 66pacific.com, there's an outer loop of a certain dimension, and then a smaller loop of 20% of the outer loop within that loop. Yes, some people do try to squish the inner loop for more of a egg shape than a complete circle, and try to get better matching that way. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a 20% inner loop attached to coax, attached to a VNA. When I turn the capacitor, I see the dips changing on the sweep. I see the dip moving on the sweep. Tell me what I'm doing wrong there. I'm looking for, at 10 meters, I'm looking for the best dip. Go ahead, Roy.
To a degree, you're both talking about the same thing from two ends of a line. What Alan is trying to get at is the best way to optimize the ability of the loop to function is to resonate the loop, the big loop, and in a way you're doing that because you're seeing the resonance when it goes down to the lowest. But because, as Alan points out, the coupling impedance matching component, the inductive loop, is not always optimal where you just plant it. If you can change the geometry a little bit to improve the impedance matching at that resonance point. I think you're both looking at the same thing, but you're looking at it from two ends of a piece of wire or a tube or what have you.
Comment? You're adjusting the antenna properly with the VNA, and you're seeing the dip when you adjust the capacitor, and you're seeing the resonance, and you're adjusting it to the proper frequency on 10 meters, but you're not doing anything to it, the match. You're just saying 20% and that's it. And I'm telling you, sometimes they turn that so it's not in the same plane as the diameter. They squish it like. Don't be bashful. Don't be afraid to bend it, because you're trying. After you resonate the antenna with the tuning cap, leave the tuning cap alone, and now you got to adjust that small loop for a match for 50 ohms. That'll bring your SWR down. Over.
Let's smaller loop that attaches to the coax. Right, so if I want to adjust anything, I need to attach the VNA between with the coax to the coupling loop. Don't I, Alan? I mean, you're saying take the coupling loop totally out of the circuit, throw it on the side, adjust the outer loop, attach the coax not to the coupling loop, but attach it to the outer loop, and get your lowest point there, and then attach the coupling loop to the coax. I don't see anybody else doing that.
I didn't say to do that. Once again, don't throw anything out. Don't disconnect anything. Leave the whole antenna all connected just the way it's going to run. There's two adjustments you have to make. The first adjustment you have to make is the tuning capacitor, and you're adjusting that so that the VNA shows you resonance at the frequency you're interested in. After that, you're done with the tuning capacitor. Now, you have to adjust the coupling loop for a minimum SWR, for a 50 ohm match. You do that by you're changing the angle of the coupling loop or squishing it, or I use a gamma match. I bend the gamma match. I don't have any experience with the coupling loop. And just to make things even more complicated, some people use a toroid with three turns of coax to couple to the loop. And I've never experimented with that. All my work has been with the gamma match. But I'm telling you, with the Faraday loop, you're talking about a mag loop with a Faraday loop to drive it. Let me let it drop. The way you do do it is you adjust the antenna for resonance first. You can do that with no instrumentation. You can do that with your computer just by tuning that variable capacitor for maximum noise. After you've done that, you're done. You don't have to adjust it to resonance anymore. Now you have to adjust the match for minimum SWR. That's the coupling loop only. That has nothing to do with the tuning cap. Over here. Clear.
Let me make sure that I have the repeater this time. Okay. The problem, as I see it, is if you look at, Al, you probably don't bother to look at YouTube that much. If you look at YouTube that much, they gloss completely over finding the best position and geometry of the coupling loop. Occasionally, if you read articles of people who do it, they will mention as an aside that they found that moving it off of position or squishing it a little bit or tilting it ever so slightly gave them a better coupling, and sometimes they don't even really go into the fact that it's an impedance matching device. So, you know, I could sort of understand where people who get most of their experience from a YouTube are a little confused by the importance that you rightly hold for the driven impedance matching element of a magnetic loop.
But the driven impedance matching element of a loop is fixed. I mean, once you build it, it's fixed. Or once you cut it, it's fixed. And it's cut to a certain diameter with a formula. Once that's done, that's fixed. The next thing is to do is to cut a coupling loop. If you're going to use a loop, which 99% of the mag loops, commercial ones or home-built ones, use, they use a coupling loop. Whether you squish it or not, or turn it a little, you know, off-axis or whatever, that's a different thing. You're just going to get a lower dip on the VNA. I don't get it. I don't get why you can't look for the dip on the VNA by turning the capacitor. Isn't that the way you tune a magnetic loop?
No.
Comment.
Okay, please comment. And I, just as an aside, again, I think we're actually talking about almost the same thing. The big thing is, if you're a big fan of getting the most out of a magnetic loop, you want the impedance matching inductive coil to match as close to 50 ohms as possible, because at 50 ohms your transmitter is going to transfer the most amount of energy into the loop. So you want that 50 ohm impedance. You're still using the variable capacitor to dip to the resonance, but now you have to match the resonant impedance to the 50 ohms that the transmitter would prefer to send its power through. Jeff, you wanted to say something.
Hey, CTPL. Yeah, thanks, Roy. Great topic. I think the confusion lies in one station is saying you've got to resonate the loop. The other one's saying I'm looking at it on a VNA and getting a dip. And the real question is the dip actually looking at SWR? Is it looking at S11, S12, you know, the typical use of the VNA? Are we using an actual directional bridge, the proper measurement techniques, et cetera? Are we using a dip meter? So I think the terminology is important in that going to resonance is just canceling or at least making capacitance equal to inductance. And at that stage, you have a resonant condition. Although the SWR might not be what you want, that's where you are at resonance. And my question to Roy is that where you're going to see the lowest SWR automatically? And I don't think that's naturally the case, although you're going to be closest to 50 ohms there. And then adjusting the coupling loop at that point will just bring you closer to 50 ohms. Anyway, comment, Roy, go ahead.
Thank you, KW.
Yes, Alan recognized. I think it's a case of probably inching towards the optimum point, you know, rather than just take one reading and lock it down and take the other reading and lock it down. You probably, I would at least, be cautious enough to take a look if that changing the coupling changed the resonance of the, you know, the capacitance for the loop. So I believe that Rich is just using it as a standard SWR sweep to get to a close approximation of the closest thing to resonance that the loop itself can do. Alan, you wanted to say something, though.
Yeah, there's very little interaction between the two, but it's two adjustments. And there's a lot of misinformation that's been printed. For example, many articles say that a small loop is defined as a tenth of a wavelength in circumference, and that's absolute rubbish. Self-resonance is about a third of a wavelength, and the best design is about a quarter of a wavelength in circumference. Maximum efficiency coincides with minimum capacitance. But let me put it another way. You're adjusting the tuning capacitor for resonance. Your VNA is showing you resonance. And if you didn't have a VNA, your ears would show you resonance because the noise peaks. But supposing you've resonated the antenna, but you've got a 200 ohm impedance, the antenna is resonant. There's no capacitive inductance. There's no capacitive reactance. There's no inductive reactance. It's purely resistive. It's 200 ohms. You've got to match it to 50 ohms. That's where the coupling loop comes in, and it must be adjusted. You can't just say, oh, it's 20%. That's what the design is. No, you have to bend it. You have to adjust it. Over.
Okay, over to you.
I also want to point out once again
that unfortunately, if you go to YouTube and things, they're very light on adjusting the impedance matching portion of the magnetic loop. They just kind of show it in its place and don't really speak of how it got there. And some people, I think, just plant it where it looks right and suffer the consequences. So I can understand why you may be confused by the difference in description between what Alan is saying and what a lot of YouTube kind of presents you with. It's an approximation that they present you with. If you want to deal with an approximation, so be it. If you want to tune it to its best capability, you have to take it out in real life. It's the same thing of building a gamma match according to some guy's instructions. You might be very lucky and it might match perfectly, but chances are you're going to have to tweak it a bit to get it to work for whatever you've built around it.
NQKW?
Yes, Alan.
If it's an article about mag loops, and it's not written by Ted Hart, W5QJR, who holds a patent, or John Portoon, W6NBC, whose stuff I've read and I feel that he understands Ted's work, as do I, but I haven't, well, I have been published, but it's difficult to find what I've written. But if it's not written by W5QJR or W6NBC, I look at it with a very jaundiced eye. Over.
If you've ever wandered through the wild woods of YouTube, there are decent people doing stuff, and there are crazy people doing stuff. And, you know, I've heard a lot of crazy stuff. I am saddened every time I will listen to a YouTube that's amateur radio related, because at least 50% of the time the guy explaining stuff doesn't have the faintest idea what he's talking about. Yeah, I remember there was a car mechanic who was trying to explain how Hall effect devices work. It's got it incredibly wrong. So, you know, there's a lot of misinformation on YouTube and the Internet. The Internet is a vast supply of both correct information and incredibly incorrect information.
Yeah. A lot of people just like to hear themselves talk, and they pass along complete baloney. And it's almost like you have to know the subject in order to... Ted Hart holds the patent. W5QTR holds the patent. And when he published his work, I corresponded with him extensively before I built my first antenna. And my first antenna was wildly successful. There's a picture of it on my QIZ page, and it's been in service for 30 years. And I've built a dozen since then. And it's a funny thing about mag loops, but when you build them, as you're building one, you've already figured out how the next one is going to be an improvement. You've already figured out how the next one's going to be better. So there's always another one, and another one, and another one. And I just shake my head at some of the misinformation that I see published. And then I saw W6NBC, John Fortune, and it was a breath of fresh air because he understands completely. He understands completely. I believe him and I trust him. And those are the only two guys I'll listen to. Back to Ned.
Okay, very good, Alan. I appreciate the time and the effort that you put into the subject and that you put into it tonight. The problem is that a lot of people don't take that amount of investigation when looking into a subject. They'll Google it, and the first thing that comes up, for God knows what reason, they'll read. A lot of people have a poorly calibrated BS meter, and guys can just feed you almost anything. I mean, you know, take a listen. 75 Meters had some brilliant guys. They do really exceptional work. They're working on digital amplifiers for amplitude modulation. But there's always a couple of old-timers out there who just give you boobamices, you know, grandmother's tales about not coiling your coax cable and making sure that it's a multiple of some aspect of a wavelength, or else doom and damnation will befall you.
Alan, how do you adjust the inner loop, the coupling loop, for maximum performance? What meter or other thing are you looking at?
The coupling loop would be the SWR bridge. You could use the antenna bridge and actually read the impedance in ohms, but it doesn't matter because you're adjusting the coupling loop for minima. You're adjusting the tuning capacitor for resonance, not for minima. You're adjusting the tuning capacitor for maximum noise. You're adjusting the coupling loop for minimum SWR.
He could also use his VNA.
Okay, I don't know VNAs.
Well, they work very well. It gives you an impedance value at whatever frequency you're setting it. So it'll tell you if your resident trough is 50 ohms or 100 ohms or 200 ohms or 500 ohms.
Great. Tell them how to use the VNA then. You know how to adjust it. You understood.
Yeah,
I adjust the coupling loop for lowest dip on the VNA too to get both of them working together to get the lowest dip on the VNA. Isn't that a valid way of doing it?
That it's troughing down to 100 ohms or 200 ohms. You can improve that impedance by distorting either the shape of the matching coil or the position in three-dimensional space. So the trouble is that if you're close to it, you're coupling with it, and so you have to rearrange the positions and then move yourself away so that you're not coupling with it and distorting the reading. But you take the DNA, you look at the impedance, it says 200, you move the coil a little bit, you look again, if it says 180, you do a little bit more, if it says 150, you do a little bit more, until you try as best you can to get it down to around 50 ohms.
Well, when you get it around 50 ohms, won't the sweep on the DNA be at its lowest?
You guys doubled at the beginning, and you still have something wrong. When you're adjusting the tuning capacitor, don't look at the DNA. When you're adjusting the tuning capacitor, just listen to a peaking and noise. You're not adjusting the tuning capacitor for minimum SWR. You're adjusting the tuning capacitor for resonance. You're adjusting the coupling loop for minimum SWR. Over.
Well, I thought that resonance will get the lowest zero sweep on a DNA.
Which you can detect with a DNA as well.
Okay,
WGBZ, do I have it?
With a DNA, I don't know. I know how to use the antenna bridge, and I know how to do it by ear. But I know that it's kind of useless to look at the DNA, to look at the SWR. I don't know about DNA. It's kind of useless to look at the SWR while you're adjusting the tuning capacitor. You're supposed to be adjusting the tuning capacitor for resonance, not match. And since you guys double every time, let me go back to net.
Okay, I don't know. At this point, it's kind of like beating a dead horse. Nowadays, I completely understand that you have been using antenna bridges and other people in the old days, the grid dip meters. The thing is that modern day, you could pick up a reasonably good VNA that has two ports in it for about $60-70. You know, in the old days, it would cost you about $20,000-$30,000. So nowadays, it's not that difficult to get a VNA. You could look at the reactance, you could look at the impedance, you could look at the resistance, all kinds of fun stuff.
A W2BZ?
Yes, Rich.
Is this incorrect? When you hear the most noise, as Alan does it, by noise, won't the DNA show the biggest dip or the best SWR when you hear the most noise?
Not necessarily. Resonance is not the lowest impedance. It's the lowest reactance. DDH with a comment? Yes, John.
I think what the confusion is realizing that resonance means no reactance, whereas coupling transforms the resistance to 50 ohms. I think if you wanted to use the VNA, you would tune the large loop so that S11 is either at 0 degrees or 180 degrees. That would mean that you now have a resistive component. Now you tune the coupling so that that resistive component becomes 50 ohms. In that case, your S11 would then go to zero. Okay, so the fact that S11 goes either to 0 degrees, don't forget S11 is in general complex. If S11 goes to 0 degrees or 180 degrees, then you have pure resistance. Now you have to transform that pure resistance, which may not be 50 ohms. You have to transform it to 50 ohms resistance, right?
Okay, thank you, John. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to sort of say the same thing. What we're aiming at is when there's resonance, there's no inductive reactance, there's no capacitive reactance, there's just resistance. Now, if you want to do that by phase angle, if you want to do that by total reactance, that's great as well. Now, whatever gets you there. You want to do it by listening, if you want to do it by a grid dip meter, you want to do it by an antenna bridge. There's many roads that lead to Rome.
Oh, but the grid dip meter has no angle. The grid dip meter only gives you magnitude, it doesn't give you an angle. Looking at S11, then it's a complex quantity, it's a polar number. When that angle is either 0 or 180 degrees, then you're looking at pure resistance. Not necessarily 50 ohms, but pure resistance. Now you transform that pure resistance to 50 ohms, then S11 should go to 0.
Okay, so have we solved this one, or is there still a problem someone has?
So far, it was the most complete answer I've heard.
Well, the definition of resonance with the absence of inductive reactions and the absence of capacitive reactants and pure resistance, that sounds good to me. And even transformation, transferring that unknown resistance to 50 ohms is what the coupling loop is for. And that sounds good to me, too. So I don't know about S anything, because I don't know VNAs, but I guess that's the way you do it with a VNA. It sounds good to me, because resonance is resonance, and coupling matches match, over.
W2BZ.
Yes, Rich?
Colin, how do you adjust the coupling loop for best resonance?
By bending it. Make it X-shape. Twist it. Put it out of the plane of the loop. Just you know, make it as small as you can. Make the SWR as low as you can. Make the resistance as close to 50 ohms as you can make it. Because that's the match. The coupling loop is the match. The tuning capacitor only sets resonance. It has nothing to do with the match. And there's very little interaction. You got to do the tuning capacitor first. Back to you.
And how do you adjust the tuning capacitor? How do you adjust the outer loop with the tuning capacitor for the lowest, for the best resonance?
Well, I do it with an antenna bridge, but you can do it with your ear. Just take it for maximum noise. Just adjust the tuning capacitor for maximum noise, or somebody else who has experience with a VNA just told you how to do it with a VNA. But once again, you have to do resonance first. That's the tuning capacitor. Once that's done, leave it alone. Now you have to adjust the match for the best SWR you can get. Back to net.
Thank you, Alan. So I hope you understand what Alan is trying to give you. He's explaining how to fine-tune a magnetic loop as opposed to, one-size-fits-all interpretation, which is not terribly effective. So I hope you understand what he's trying to get at, that you can manipulate the inductive coil in three-dimensional space, up, down, in, out. You can displace it to another area, even within the plane, and you can distort the loop somewhat and then reassess what the impedance reading you're getting and act accordingly. Do more of whatever works and less of whatever doesn't work.
Okay, once you get this coupling loop in the exact perfect position, the exact perfect shape, how do you adjust this mag loop for lowest SWR?
That's what you just done.
Yes, the whole point of adjusting the inductive loop is to get you the best SWR. Once you've discerned the geometry of the coupling loop to the main loop, you lock it down in position, and hopefully you're done.
Oh, wait a second. I just figured out something. Hold on. We went ahead, we assumed that he knew something that a lot of people don't know. A mag loop, you could resonate a hula hoop on 160, but it's not going to be very efficient. A mag loop is only efficient on the highest band that it covers. You're talking about a 10 meter antenna, and you can adjust that tuning capacitor so it'll cover the 10 meter band. If you want to work 15 meters, you're going to have to readjust the tuning capacitor, but the antenna's not going to work very well. Mag loops only work well on the highest band that they cover. So once you've adjusted that tuning capacitor for 10 meters, you don't have to adjust the tuning capacitor anymore. Now you're adjusting the coupling loop for optimum SWR, and now go have fun on 10 meters. Over.
When both the smaller loop and the outer loop are adjusted optimally, won't that produce the lowest SWR?
When the coupling loop is adjusted optimally, that will produce the lowest SWR. When the coupling loop is adjusted properly, that will produce the lowest SWR. Putting the tuning capacitor or frequency will certainly raise the SWR, but you don't adjust the tuning capacitor by watching SWR. You adjust the tuning capacitor either by listening for noise or by watching inductive and capacitive. It's approach zero, so you've only got resistance. That's resonance. That has nothing to do with SWR. SWR is the match. If you're 200 ohms impedance at resonance and you're measuring a 50 ohm, you've got a 4-to-1 mismatch, okay? But if it's pure resistance, you can adjust the coupling loop so that it's 50 ohms. So you'll have a 1-to-1 SWR. You must make the second adjustment. And it has nothing to do with the first adjustment. Once you've adjusted the tuning capacitor for resonance, keep your hands off of it. Back to net.
Okay, Alan. I just want to ask you one little bit. The reason why multi-band magnetic loops are inefficient is that as you go to lower and lower frequencies, the radiation resistance of the antenna gets very, very small. So the insertion loss of all the little bits and pieces become massively lossy. The efficiencies can drop down to less than 1%. The highest radiation resistance for magnetic loop is at its highest frequency, and so its efficiency is highest at that frequency. But if you build a 10-meter loop, are you telling me that you don't, if you're going from one end of 10 meters to the other end of 10 meters, you never touch the variable capacitor?
Well, I don't know about one. 10 meters is a pretty big band. My mag loop is on 20 meters. It's tuned for 14030. I'm a CW man. And it covers from 14080 down to 14000. You know, under 2-to-1 SWR. That's 80 kilohertz. A little bit of inefficiency. It should be probably half of that. But I'm not really complaining. You know, I'd rather have the broadband coverage. You're correct that radiation resistance is maximum at maximum length. However, radiation resistance is really, really tiny under all circumstances. There's more to it than that. As you lower the frequency, you require more capacitance. As you require more capacitance, the voltage at the capacitor increases, you need greater plate spacing, and the efficiency of the antenna drops. As you lower the frequency, the diameter of the conductor becomes more significant. 2-inch pipe isn't big enough, and then 4-inch pipe isn't big enough, and you know, it gets ridiculous. It theoretically, you could build a Mac loop for 160, but the bandwidth would be less than a sideband signal. Over.
Yeah, I agree with you, but because you happen to like a relatively narrow range of 20 meters, there are people who do use the tuning variable capacitor to get to the other side of each band, even if it's a monoband mag loop. So I don't want to give people the wrong impression that, you know, the average mag loop person should never consider adjusting their variable capacitor, because a lot of people kind of go all over the place. So by necessity, they have to.
Just as long as they understand that the more capacitance they put in, it lowers the frequency of the antenna, but it lowers the efficiency of the antenna. And my designs are for minimal capacitance, some capacitance, but minimal capacitance, which results in minimal voltage at the capacitor. Hey, every mag loop on the market is QRP, and my designs, you can run a KW. What can I say?
Okay, there are a few full linear legal power under certain modes, but okay. Yeah, I mean, the problem is that we live in a world where people have been known to use, you know, 160 meter ham sticks on their cars. You know, some of them realize that it's less than 1% efficient, and some don't care. So, you know, efficiency is in the eye of the beholder. Unfortunately, there's no very easy way to measure it to kind of tell people that their antennas are very inefficient. They have to understand some of the theory involved and how antennas work.
Well, actually, according to Ted Hart, you can measure the efficiency of a mag loop by measuring the bandwidth. The broader it is, the less efficient it is.
Okay, I didn't know that there was a direct relationship between energy transfer efficiencies and Qs.
Qs or Q?
Q, quality. You know, different resonant circuits have different Qs, and things like magnetic loops are infamous for having a very high Q.
Yeah, but you see, when you introduce resistance into the mag loop, which is intolerable, it lowers efficiency. But when you introduce resistance into it, you lower Q, which makes the antenna more broadband. And by measuring the bandwidth, you can determine the efficiency and determine whether or not your antenna is working properly.
Okay, but I mean, does it give you relative values or absolute values?
It's Ted Hart's formulas. I don't know. I kind of fly by the seat of my pants. I understand how the various parameters affect one another, but if you want to know about something individually, once again, Ted Hart, W5QJR, holds the patent, wrote the book. The name of the book is High Efficiency Antennas Alias the Loop, or something like that.
BTBC.
Yes, Rich.
Original question was, how come they say do not use an antenna tuner with a magnetic loop?
Because the reason why they say don't use an antenna tuner with a mag loop is because if you use an antenna tuner, you're simply fooling your radio. You're not adjusting the mag loop properly, so the antenna won't work right. The radio will be happy. Your SWR bridge will say your SWR is unity. You know, if you measure on the radio side, it'll say your SWR is unity because you adjusted the tuner, but your antenna isn't adjusted and isn't going to work well.
Well, that's true of any type of antenna.
Well, yes and no. You get into something called